Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Almi. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almi.
Welcome to our listening audience. You are listening to the mystical world we live in, and I have with me today Rogier, who is going to be asking me whatever questions he would like about the mystical world we live in and these secrets that lie behind what most folks take as face value. And so, Rogier, welcome, and thank you for assisting us as always, and please lead us wherever you want to go.
All right, well, this is mostly from questions which I have compiled in the past days. Let's see, the first one asks about, well, what is written, the concept of the mother, and asks if, as in our traditional metaphysical sense of divinity, we are supposed to see this as an abstract overarching principle, you know, which we may view through anthropomorphic eyes, like, as in ascribing human emotions to something that isn't human, or really, how are we supposed to look at it?
The discovery into the nature and being of the Infinite Mother has been a journey that is ongoing for me on a day-by-day basis. So what my answer today is will not be the same as what it is tomorrow. But, for example, I became aware that during the past years in which I have been working on Mother's behalf in turning with other masters in my classes the key that would unlock membranes so that the cosmos can move in an orderly fashion between realms. Because if a membrane tears, it creates a chaotic Big Bang experience. So I've had to work with her on a day-by-day basis. I became aware that the positive, proactive, more masculine principle of the mother is, in fact, on Earth. And that, so I'm going to give you sort of the metamorphosis of my understanding. And so that I first became aware of, that was on Earth. In fact, I describe in Secrets of the Hidden Realms the extraordinary event that took place in the halls of Amenti, which is a ancient temple that, you know, the Egyptians knew about and so on. I mean, it's been there for very, very many cycles of creations and is in the crust of the earth. So in the halls of Amenti, there was a coronation of this mother as space started to fold in. Her feminine aspects had been holding open these spaces, like holding open cubes of space ahead of us for us to move into. They started to fold in and come into her. And the first, when that happened, a coronation was held, and it was in the halls of Amenti. And, you know, the experience is described in that book. But as we ascended, there were millions and millions of her aspects, feminine externalized expressions of her that she had left behind during the ascension cycles or created to open spaces for us to move through, because sometimes we took different routes than which we had previously descended from. So it's like coming down one road and deciding to head around the block and go back the other. Then she created these externalizations to hold open the space. But wherever these externalizations were still in levels where life had previously existed. In other words, at one point, we came from there. So finally, we came to the top of a massive cluster of cosmoses and found oceans of consciousness where there was no form. There was mind that was aware, divided into separate levels, separated by membranes. And there were about, maybe a few hundred of them. And then there was again cosmoses. And what this was part of is massive DNA strings, like DNA-like strings. They are, in fact, the pathways, and the cosmoses are, in fact, reflections of the DNA within this positive aspected mother, which is on Earth. The oceans of consciousness were merely the space between, say, a cluster of cosmoses and another cluster. But we did eventually come to a place from which life began. And at that point, there were no longer any formed aspects of mother. There were only millions of oceans of consciousness. But even that did not go on indefinitely. Where did all the feminine aspects go, all those millions of them? They were incorporated into the positive aspect. So the mother on Earth became more and more and more luminous. Well, then we had these oceans of consciousness that lay outside the cosmos with no other consciousness, cosmoses anywhere. In December, I had the very, very frightening experience that I had to really get over myself. It took me about 24 hours where Mother instructed me to do something in which I had to go through the oceans of consciousness into what lay beyond. And what lay beyond goes on forever and ever, and it is mind at rest. It's not different than the oceans, except that they are awakened and they are separated by membranes into levels. Beyond that, there's mind at rest that is still mother, but it's not differentiated, nor is it aware. It's sleeping. So, you know, now the question becomes, did this mother form from them, or did they form from this mother? Because there's now only one formed mother left, and it's the one on Earth. And they formed from this mother.
All right, but I think what the there's one aspect of the question which, you know, which I'm not sure this person had read too much of your books, but which is really asking about, you know, because in metaphysics, in traditional metaphysics, they would often say that, you know, we ascribe human emotions to a god, you know, that isn't human at all, and that's just our sort of limited human understanding, you know, how we tend to do that. I think they probably view emotions negatively as well. So the question really is, I mean, are we supposed to see her as this sort of abstract thing which we cannot comprehend, or, you know, a being which experiences emotions and things humans know as well?
I have seen Mother cry with joy at the father joining her side again. I have seen Mother laugh and have passion and joy, and everything else that is part of us is part of her. There can be nothing in existence that is praiseworthy, and the pure frequencies of emotion are praiseworthy. That does not originate from her and is found in full expression, first and foremost, in Mother.
All right, I think that's clear. Well, we have a question here asking, which might actually be a very long or very short one, I'm not sure, but what is the assemblage point and what is its function?
The assemblage point is that which assists perception to take place. We have bodies stacked inside one another, etheric, linear lines of light, then etheric, etc. One inside each other. The seventh one has light fibers. And it originates from the life force center, which is in the heart at this point of our evolution. And it goes through all the other bodies. Whatever light fibers, that assemblage point, which is like a tennis ball sized white ball of light, whichever it illuminates of those fibers is what determines our reality. For instance, there's the very detrimental practice that some shamanic practitioners did of moving the assemblage point downwards into the band of the beast. And they would literally shapeshift into that beast. So, changing their physical form as well. But the more they did that, and even doing it once, they would pick up traits and characteristics of that particular animal, and, you know, which is a lower form of evolution than man. And so it is taking us in the opposite direction of a being that is evolving into higher consciousness. But it determines our reality. To walk between the worlds, you have to shift that assemblage point and maintain that shift. And you can then, for all intents and purposes, disappear entirely out of this reality into the next. And this reality for you will disappear as well.
Okay, well, that's interesting because,
No, I just was going to say that's one way in which one moves between realms.
Yeah, it just reminds me. I had someone tell me once, as a reaction to you, basically, like, and then he said, no, she's not a Nagual. A Nagual is someone who is basically a shapeshifter. So, because I've never really heard anything about shapeshifting in your work, but I see that's basically then what happens when you move the assemblage point far enough down.
Yes, it is. In the band of the beast is not a place to move it to.
Okay. But, of course, they have done that a lot then in, say, South American countries in particular.
North Americans used to do it a lot. Many of those principles have been lost, but there are still some that do it. It's not that hard to move an assemblage point into the band of the beast and maintain the shift. It's not. But, you know, who in their right mind would deliberately forfeit consciousness just to impress a few followers?
Well, enough, apparently. Okay, and does the mother, the infinite mother, have an assemblage point as well?
She does, actually. And the externalized version of that assemblage point is the father. But she has everything we have in terms of the fields. Her heart is her assemblage point. Her externalized assemblage point as such is the father.
Okay, but does he have an assemblage point as well?
Yes, he does.
Okay, interesting. What is the difference between dragons and twitches?
They look very similar. The snout area of the twitch is a little rounder than the more elongated dragon facial features. But I have encountered several types of dragons, and they're not always the same looking. So the features are different, but the race is entirely different. The language of twitches, it's incredibly difficult. I have spoken the dragon languages, and we give the symbols that they've developed specifically for communication with man, as well as their language and some of their vocabulary in the book Secrets of the Hidden Realms. But at the same time, the twitch language, I mean, I don't even know how to begin. It's very, very difficult language. A whole different evolutionary line. And the story of the twitches that we give in Secrets of the Hidden Realms is a very sad one, because up until 2005, when the dynasties of the dragons changes and the story around that is profound on Earth, we find that the twitches are suppressed by and humiliated by the old dragon dynasty and the leaders. And they were stripped of magic at the age of 12 years old for such a long time that after a while they just automatically lost it after the age of 12. Mother restored this with the assistance of the new dragon leader when the dynasty changed. There's vast differences.
Okay. Let's see. There's one woman who asks that she would like to come to your workshop, but doesn't really know what to expect, and maybe you could inform her.
Join the club. Because basically, it's unlike what you would know of any other workshop in the world, believe me. There's nothing else like it. Basically, you are sharing the mystical journey of my life for 1 week. And because every day the cosmic truths change, my marching orders from the Infinite Mother changes, that which we are solving on behalf of the whole is changing. Every day is different than the day before, and the only thing I know for sure is that I don't know a thing as I begin each day. So what will occur during those workshops? It is not something that I can predict. Will you get information? The cutting-edge information of the cosmos happens effortlessly as we go through that. Secondly, will you have mystical experiences? Profound ones. Multiple masters in the classes are speaking languages, having symbols. They are having the most profound experiences. You know, we work with timelines. We move backwards and forwards in time. There's multiple things that occur that are deep mystical experiences. Thirdly, will you grow? Well, the majority of the people that are in the class are masters. What is a master? A master is someone that has silenced the internal dialogue. That puts them either immediately into God consciousness, or if they've gone into advanced stages, they will go into ascended mastery. But regardless, there is not a dialogue unless they are choosing to have one because they're analyzing something. Being in the presence of that many masters will, by grace, in addition to the great blessings for the tasks that you will be performing during that week, come to you in a way that it has in the last year been only one time that somebody has lasted throughout the whole class, because some people spin out after a few days simply because it is for them fearful to let go of their belief systems. But if you can come with enough humility, you will be catapulted into advanced stages beyond your wildest imagining.
All
and,
right.
You know, we are asked to do things on behalf of the cosmos, so the fourth factor is one of service.
Okay, and when you speak of tasks, can you give any examples?
Yes. I think it was in August or September, August, when I was in Alaska, when the one being formed, when the one being existed before Mother, and she is feminine because the majority of existence is feminine because it has to be life-bearing. So before Mother created her first creation, which is the Father, she was, by yourself. There was no map of inner space able to be formed without having something to relate to. Then finally she formed the father. When she formed the father, she now had an outer map of space. She formed a circle of light, shall we say, in which she could interact with him, because she couldn't just, you know, have him be in a form and not have some parameter for him to be able to experience life in. It created an outer map of space. We got the instruction from Mother, fascinating instruction, to create her inner map of space. A child is dyslexic if at the age of 5 they do not form an inner and an outer map of space. It's called bilaterality and directionality. It is the critical point at which that map must be formed. Otherwise, things are seen back to front and upside down. Mother saw things upside down. Upside down vision makes illusion. Hence, when things were mirrored back to her by her creations, like father, that had freedom of choice to some extent, she didn't know if it was her or not, because it was mirrored to her and she saw it as upside down. So we were given the instruction to create an inner map of space for Mother.
All right, now, and I think that when you, it might be puzzling for a few people when you speak of such tasks, because they might not know, you know, how you perceive the physical, and I think a lot of people would still think that there's all these higher regions where there's the lords and the this and the that sort of overseeing human affairs, and that it's really there where it's at. But, you know, in your classes, you sort of make clear that it's really in the physical where new knowledge is gained. But I think that might be an important point to sort of clarify a bit when you speak of such tasks.
Well, the two points that are overlooked when people assume that here is, first of all, the real mother, the mother from which everything formed, is in the physical. And she's here on Earth. The Earth is vitally important, as we've discussed in previous shows that we've done together. She's not what she seems. So she is here. So it's from here, if the outer realms form, they don't have more consciousness than the physical. They may have better vision in some things because they are not hampered by the narrow focus that physicality requires. However, it does not mean that they have higher evolution. Now, so that's the first thing that's often overlooked. It's not as above, so below. It's as below, so above. Because it is from the physical mother that the above formed. If we think of the above in terms of more and more higher and higher frequencies. Then the second point that is overlooked very frequently is that the known and the unknown meet at one particular point, the densest level of existence. We are currently, as humanity, the densest level of existence. So all new information has to be gotten here, nowhere else. They can, once we get it, they can see ramifications of it, and as such, they can be very, very useful to speak to an angel and ask, but they won't get it. We are the first ones that have to get it.
Yeah, well, that's very amazing and refreshing
to
know.
Yes.
And I think, by the way, that when someone asks about, as in this question about, you know, your quote-unquote workshop, you know, to provide some sort of glimpse into it, I think that the hidden assumption is that you would sort of be teaching from a closed body of knowledge, and that therefore just providing some sort of techniques or just some sort of regurgitate some information.
And I mean, if I did, then I could give them a curriculum. But we are creating truth because we're masters, and students seek truth. Once they leave that class, they will be creating truth. Yesterday's truth was formed by a profound insight based on two of the masters in Ireland that sent us their insights. I asked the mother, and it changed the cosmos. They will continue. Once they've been in these classes, they will continue to be creating truth.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do still. We did actually touch upon this, but I do find it kind of interesting because I think a lot of people are still there. You know, what one of the, you know, our friend, our female master friend from the Netherlands told us about, you know, friends of her who have been saying, you know, how dare they do all this cosmic, you know, tampering there in those classes with Almin. But I think that's sort of indicative of a perspective which is still pretty much widespread, the sort of as above, so below principle.
And the other point that they're not aware of here is that there are, in fact, beings embodiment that are in the God Kingdom on Earth.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, you know, it is our duty to become that. Because it's imperative, Mother has said, that all the higher kingdoms be represented in embodiment, because the earth as the archetype has to be representative of every being.
Yes. And then how would you just, to be sure, how would you qualify God Kingdom? I mean, in terms of transfiguration, right?
Yes. A being... Now, we in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, we have very carefully mapped out for everyone what happens as those fields transfigure. Because in prior centuries, beings would vibrate out of here with their body into the ascended master realms, and they would not be writing books. But it was in 2005, in February, when Mother called me and said, the planetary ascension is about to begin. Get the leadership ready for the future. That's why, you know, when people gravitate to these shows, to the books, I know that they're part of that leadership. And so, because Mother has promised that, you know, other teachers out there, I don't really know what the heck they do or don't do, but I do know that their goal is to accumulate more and more students. Ours is to create more and more gods in the flesh. And it transfigures the field. When you go into God consciousness, which a lot of the masters in the Far East are in, when they're no longer identifying with the body and the ego and so on. And incidentally, you know, sometimes you can much easier pick up, oh my goodness, you know what, I forgot our commercial breaks. One moment, we will tell you about God consciousness when we get back.
Brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almin. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any of the books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almin at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. This is our second section of The Mystical World We Live In. discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. My name is Almin, and I've got with me Rogier. Rogier, I was going to talk about what happens when one goes into the God Kingdom.
Yes,
and
you were.
I was about to tell a funny story, actually, because sometimes the masters of the Far East, they look very holy in that they are so expanded. I mean, you can virtually put a pin into their finger. They won't even feel it. They sit in total expansion and bliss, and you can feel the holiness emanate through them. But then as you go into later stages, sometimes it becomes less apparent. For instance, the third phase of God consciousness, where you have to re-enter the doingness part of your being, otherwise you stagnate into the beingness. So you have to re-enter the human experience at that point. I remember that it was so hard for me to remember how to walk, how to do basic things like cook. I looked very klutzy. I didn't look very holy. I remember speaking at some conference somewhere, and I could not find my way up the stage. Finally, you know, I crawled up on the stage. Then I couldn't quite get up because I wasn't walking very well. I couldn't quite get up, so I crawled over to the podium, helped myself up on the podium, and by the time I got up there, you know, most of the people had left because they thought for sure I was losing it. Later on, you get more adept, especially in the God kingdoms, you get more adept at handling the human form. And it can be very difficult to see the difference between somebody that's in identity consciousness and somebody that is light years ahead in consciousness, namely the God kingdom. The God kingdom lives in zero point energy because the zero point, which in the ascended master is a small opening behind the life force center, explodes and surrounds the body. And the zero point energy virtually closes the gap between cause and effect. So if something is meant to change, it does almost immediately. Oftentimes things don't, because there's a much bigger picture and it's but one strand of it. So that's, in a nutshell, the God Kingdom.
All right. Okay. next question is, it's a bit brief. I'm not sure where you would take it from there. But really, if there are cosmic chakras, and if you can sort of outline these a bit, if there are any.
Yes. There are. But where they used to be has moved. Mother, see, the heavens that we have currently, which I think it is described, if I'm not mistaken, about the new heavens and the new earth, I believe it's described, now don't quote me on this, but I think it's Revelations 21, verse 1. And it describes that there is a new heaven and a new earth. And this has indeed happened. We do have a new heaven and a new earth, except it has been hidden from us, and so we haven't seen it. So the point is that Mother had the 12 constellations that used to carry the life force centers of the cosmos. The cosmic chakras. Antares carried, I believe it was the third chakra. Arcturus, the second chakra. Let me try and remember where the root chakra was. I'm not entirely sure I remember that. But Lyra was the crown chakra. The Pleiades, I believe, were the third eye. Antares was what is called the Haran chakra, which is the life force center chakra that used to then be behind the belly button. She called these planetary systems to come and be around the Earth in a circle. The arrogance of their leaders, in many instances, denied her request. I know that Oksana Huratep, who was the leader of the Antares system, refused. You know, he felt the Earth should be rotating around it rather than they rotate around us, because for eons, the importance of the Earth has been overlooked. So Mother replaced those leaders. She called leaders that had more impeccability, more awareness, and more consciousness. They, too, ultimately rebelled against Mother. And because of the great light that she is on Earth and the great energy that she is on Earth, it repelled those star systems. So they shot away from where we are. I know that none of this is visible in our current skies, but which is like a movie that keeps things in place so we don't know of these big changes and lose consciousness through fear. Then she created brand new planetary systems around the Earth. And you can find them in the book, Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revealing the Mysteries of Isis and their names. They are currently around us. So what Mother has done is that she temporarily put the cosmic centers there, but she has a counterpart, and the counterpart is that it's in the gems of her crown. Mother's crown is interdimensionally photographed when it was in the process of being constructed, and it is in the book in color photography, surrounded by fairies, and we show the gems to before they go into the crown, in the book Aruba Serina, Book of Fairy Magic. In that book, there are colored photos that were taken the day we were shown the crown of Mother. And so the chakras are held in the gems of her crown.
Okay, and
can we take a quick break before you get to the next question?
Yes.
Let's take a commercial break, and please stay with us. We are delighted when you join us for these shows.
Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. After 3 months of intense physical preparation from January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, a state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almeen's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Al Means books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Andrew here. We're ready for our next question, so fire away at any time.
Well, something I'd like to pick up upon is what you said previously about this sort of hologram in the sky, but you said that to prevent people from losing consciousness through fear, and I thought it might be interesting to sort of expound a little on that dynamic, how those two things are related.
The way that a spiritual master tackles the unknown is that they believe without believing, and they know without knowing. In other words, let's say suddenly your mother's wearing your father's clothes, and your father's wearing your mother's clothes, and you enter the house, weird situation in front of you. If you get surprised by it, surprise drains energy. Obsessing about the questions, what could have happened? What happened? Has my mother lost it? Has my father lost it? If you obsess about the questions, it also loses energy. So what the master does, because in an unknown situation, there might be a great deal of energy required from him to respond, is that he goes into an emptiness of mind. And how it's done is that a master is someone who lives in the silence of the mind. So when they live that way, they live from their greatest perspective, which is like a spider web, if you will, of light superimposed over the whole cosmos. When they come back to the full present, like let's say they are smelling a rose, they want to totally be in that experience. They pull back to the very center of that spider web. The minute something shocks a master, they move out a few layers on that spider web. Not far enough out there that they lose the details, but just far enough out there that their left brain doesn't kick in and obsess about the questions. When there is surprise or shock, like when cataclysms have happened to the planet in the past, this is very clear from the history given by the history keepers of the cosmos, which is comprising the second half of the book, The Gift of the Unicorns. In there, it carefully explains that when these massive disasters happened, as in Lemuria or Atlantis, for instance, you know, and we should possibly devote a show sometime to discussing a few of those, but at that point, what happens is big loss of consciousness because of the shock. Why the loss of energy and the loss of consciousness equates is that, you know, we've said this on past shows, but we'll just refresh our listeners' memory. All initial energy is utilized by the left brain. Only the excess goes to the right brain. And when there is no excess, then you can't access the majority of life, which is not unknown to its left brain cognition, and it utilizes the non-cognitive knowingness in terms of feelings and so on generated by the right brain. So you immediately close off the majority of which can be known. And if we think of awareness, it's how much can we know at once? People usually use the word consciousness for that, though it is technically something different.
All right. Okay. This is from one of the listeners, and he asks that you speak of harlots, but then so does Toth in the Emerald Tablets, and he's really asking who he is and if he still exists. That's Horlet.
Okay. The Master Horlet is one of the most overlooked beings that I can imagine for the service that he renders. He is the planetary god of the Earth. Every cosmic body, like the sun, has a planetary god. The current god of our sun is Sanat Kumara. He was called to that earlier on in about March of 2007. But he is the god of that sun. Every planet has a god or a goddess. A moon does, a planet does. And so the god of our very own earth, not to be known and acknowledged, is amazing. Horlet is sometimes called the dweller. One of the reasons is that I've gotten to know him. He is precious beyond belief to me. Our friendship goes back eons of time. And the Lord Horlet is actually very, very shy. I once had him speak to one of my classes, and never again. He was humiliated. He just felt awful. He was very, very upset about it. He said, "I'm too shy to speak to the public." And he said, "For a long time I haven't spoken, and then you put me on the spot." So I've never done that since. But I communicate with him regularly, and he is the most beautiful being. He radiates white light out. He has whitish hair that hangs down on his shoulders with blue eyes. I mean, he is magnificent. And through the incredible trials and testings that have been done during the cycles of the fall in which the Father did not participate, he was the only male god of my acquaintance that has never, even for one half a heartbeat, faltered. He has been totally, totally true blue to the mother and to all of life in the most impeccable way that he possibly can. His love for her is profound. And it brings tears to my eyes. He is magnificent.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's a good answer. Next question asks about the concept of the great central sun, if it exists, and how it relates to the Infinite Mother.
Very good question. Because when we were in the cycles of the fall, where the Big Bang happened from, which is like a tear in a membrane, or a portal of some sort, of the various levels as we went down, down, down through membranes. That was the origin of life. And so, let's give a metaphor, because this is not quite clear. Let's say we have a sheet of paper, we have a heavy stone that falls through it. We've now broken the membrane, we've gone below, life has spilled out in spiraling arms of white light and dark light. That hole, the central sun before, in lower cycles of life, was a hole. And the hole was the level above it. We were looking through that hole into the levels above it. Now, you know, I've never said this in public. Now the central sun's center is the earth. It is incredible because it is on the earth where mother and father dwell. And their light is so vast that for eyes that can see light directly, we are in the center of the central sun. If you can see in the right way, the sun has a landscape. It's not just fire. Beings can live on it. But then you have to be several higher levels up. In the same way, we are inside the sun.
Okay, but then you would say that the great central sun is pretty much constituted then by the mother and the father.
Well, it's constituted at this point by them, yes. Previously, it wears the most light, and was in the hole that came through, because as life fell, mother deliberately dimmed her own life in order to be able to bring it back. And so she descended with it. And the story of that is told by the history keepers, and it's an amazing tale. It's a tale of such devotion and love. And so it is in the gift of the unicorns. But Mother deliberately dimmed her light, and in those days, then, you know, the hole showed the most light because it showed the level above.
Okay, interesting. How does Mars figure in the history of the Earth, and has humanity lived there as well?
All right, let's go there next. I love these questions through here. Thank you. But let's take a few quick moments for a break.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, a state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Helmi's life was dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Key series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Almin at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back for our last 5 minutes of the show. And we hope you will join us because we air every Friday night, Pacific time at 8 p.m. Ruhir, we have time for one last question.
Well, it was actually about, we're just starting on Mars, how it figures in the
history. Oh, that's right. You already asked it. The only things that I know about Mars so far is as follows. First of all, humanity was created eons before a star system settled this. A star, actually, is not a system. It's a specific planet. Settled the Earth. And the settling of that planet, of the Earth, is described in our Sumerian records. And they are called the Anunnaki, and it is referring specifically to the people that came in from the planet Nibiru. Now, I know that the Anunnaki did have a settlement of males on Mars, and why that makes it very, very interesting is because the face on Mars is the tomb of Arulu. And Arulu was one of the former kings of Nibiru that managed for the first time to make his way through the asteroid belt to the Earth when he was sent in exile. And he basically blasted a path with weapons through the asteroid belt and made it through to the Earth. And the group of beings that were left on Mars, I'm trying to remember what their name was, what they called them, but they were left there and they found the conditions very inhospitable. They say that there was a great deal of dust, there was a great deal of heat, it was very, very unpleasant living situations. Now, in Genesis, there is the strangest little verse about the gods coming down among humans and seeing that the daughters of man were fair or something to that extent, that they took them away as wives. This did in fact happen when for the first time one of the people from Nibiru married one of the hybrid race they had helped genetically engineer, which is man, as the shorter version of man. Ra, or Marduk, was the first to marry a human. The males, there were a couple of thousand of them on Mars, was under the leadership of Marduk. And they came down for the wedding. And when they left, there were some human females that they took with them. And that is the verse referred to in Genesis. They were there for a while, but the living conditions made it such that they asked to be released from that duty. It was for the ships coming from Nibiru through the hole that had been blasted in the asteroid belt to their settlement on Earth. And they came very specifically to collect gold. Hence, people of the Incas and so on collected gold because they said it was for the gods. Because they would grind it down to gold powder, and then they would put it in their outer atmosphere, which was deteriorating, and it solved that problem for the ecology. A lot of what we think of as temples and ruins of temples in Central and Southern America are in fact mining operations.
Wow.
You know, it's time for us to say goodbye, Rogier. And would you help us again with our next show?
Yes, I will.
Thank you very, very much. And my love always to all you listeners.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Al Mee. Please join us again next week.